exclusive interviews, real-world test drives. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat. This is The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Well, good day, everybody. I am a car enthusiast. I hope you are, too. The most important thing is I have a lot of friends that are car enthusiasts and car experts. That makes me, I guess, smart because I can't know everything, can I? One of those really smart, incredibly handsome men that I know, already smart, is Stephen Cole Smith. Hi, Steve.
I am a good-looking man, Alan, but I think it's time I stop getting by on my looks and start getting by on my credibility, which I think is probably going to, you know, put me in deep, you know what. But I think it's time to switch over to a personality as opposed to just a pretty boy.
Well, you know, I know you have a stand-up act in Florida where you live, and I've yet to see that.
Have you ever wondered why you look in the dryer and you put all these socks in and they come out and their socks missing? Where do they go, Alan? Where do those socks go?
I don't know. I just keep buying new ones. You know, I figured I buy tube
socks.
That's all the
stand-up I got, so we're done with that.
Right, exactly. But I, you know what, to that point, I just buy tube socks, all black. That way it doesn't matter. Who cares?
I know, but it's amazing how many textures of black I've got.
I know.
You know, like one that's like real silky and one that's real rough, and I put it on my feet, and my feet go, hey, what's the deal?
What's going on? Exactly. Oh, you're funny. Well, listen, you are one of the lucky guys that got to go to the Daytona 500 last weekend. And not only that, you got to go in style by driving the new Camaro ZL1 that that all us car guys and gals have been kind of drooling over to find out, you know, how is it? So two things. Well, we've got one, a confusing new format for NASCAR. And on Facebook, you watch some of the guys that are hardcore NASCAR fans are like, NASCAR's dead forever. You know, and you know,
right.
Facebook, right? But so you're going to have to help us kind of sort things out. And the other thing is, of course, you were there, so you got to experience the whole thing. You know, give me a couple of minutes on it. How was it, Daytona 500?
You know, they've got obviously the new format changes where they make the race into three stages. They kind of divided up into thirds, although the last stage is the longest. So really the guys are running for three different checkered flags, and they get points based on how they finish in all those stages. And because of that, they figure there'd be more action because everybody gets excited running to the checkered flag, and there is what Roger Penske calls more action, which TV calls more wrecks. And that's what happened in the truck race Friday and the Xfinity race Saturday. Everybody's racing for those two extra checkered flags in the middle, and they've actually made up a little flag that kind of has some checkers in it, but it's not really a checkered flag. It's like a flag you've never seen before because it never existed.
Right.
It's just kind of a weird little flag. So everybody's racing for those, and sure enough, there are crashes as guys are trying to get to those checkered flags. So I guess there was more excitement. But that kind of didn't happen with the cup race because those guys crashed on their own. They had like the first half of the race was pretty, and I'm talking about the entire race, was pretty docile. And then all of a sudden, things just went to hell, and veteran drivers just started messing up. Kind of started with Kyle Busch losing a rear tire, which they always say they cut the rear tire. But Bush actually got on TV and said, well, it's too bad because these Goodyear tires just aren't very good at holding air.
I saw that.
Everybody in the press went, oh, my God, he's going to be called to the hauler after this. Because, of course, the only tire they use is a Goodyear tire.
Right.
And have for decades. So Kyle got in trouble, but he took out a bunch of cars. And then, that was Jimmy Johnson was over. Danica Patrick was over. It just kept happening to where one driver after another, major names, dropped by the side of the road. And in the end, here's Kurt Busch in a beat-up car. You know, the cars go into the museum directly from the track for an entire year down here. And that is going to be the ugliest, most beat-up car ever that's going into the one. that's going to go into the museum. But still, it was a win for Kurt Busch and for Tony Stewart, who owns the car. And it was interesting because I spent the Saturday night before with Tony at a local dirt track when he was racing a sprint car. And he said one of his regrets of not coming back is never winning the Daytona 500. Mm. And all Tony had to do was retire, and he gets the Daytona 500 as a winner.
All right, hang tight. We'll take a little break. Yeah, it's always nice to have a nasty, ugly-looking, beat-up race car in the... Actually, for me, I like seeing the nastier-looking, you know, like the Daytona 500 race car. I'm going to go see that one because it was in the arena. It went in for battle, and there it is. We'll take a little break. It is The Drive. We're talking with Stephen Cole Smith. He is motorsports expert extraordinaire, and we'll be right back. On the track, even 1/100th of a second decides who wins and who loses. That's why Bridgestone uses advanced racing technology to create their fastest street-legal replacement tire yet. The new Bridgestone Potenza RE71R. Engineered with an innovative hydro-evacuation surface and unique tread compounds, the new Potenza RE71R is designed to give you maximum grip and ultimate cornering on or off the track. Bridgestone is changing the game in tire performance. I get knocked down. Well, you're listening to The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor talking a little bit about the Daytona 500 last weekend. NASCAR in Atlanta this weekend. We're talking with Racer Magazine, Racer.com. You can see his work in Racer.com. Stephen Cole Smith, also in Auto Week and Automobile. And we're talking about, again, the Daytona 500. Confusing new format. Three stages. They're racing for points for each one of the stages. They say there's going to be more action, equals more wrecks, of course. In watching the Daytona 500, you know, people have mixed opinions on it. And Steve, I'm just curious about your opinion personally. Do you think this new format, where the race is kind of divided into segments, is going to make it more exciting for people to watch? Because, as you were saying in the last segment, they're going to be racing for that flag to where it's like a horse running back to the barn. You know, things kind of heat up a little bit. What are your personal thoughts?
Well, this whole thing was driven by the TV package. And the largest source of income, I think, for NASCAR itself is the TV deal. So those are the guys that are kind of riding this horse and paying for the feed. And they're the ones that wanted more action, and that's what they came up with. So whether you and I think it's more exciting probably doesn't matter, but if the TV people think it's more exciting, then NASCAR probably did the right thing. For a lot of traditionalists, and I'm a little bit of a traditionalist, it just looks like gerrymandering where they just keep fiddling with things over and over again. You know, to where it's, I mean, to try to explain all the changes in the past couple of years, I mean, it would take me a couple of pages to write, to get down to everything.
Right.
To talk about, you know, how Danica did okay in stage one and then crashed out, I think, before stage two, but she's still in pretty good shape in the points because, you know, she did okay in stage one. I mean, normally you look at the finish and that's where the points are. You know, if a guy finished 30th, he's 30th in the points at the first race. But that's already not true. So the guys on NASCAR radio, you know, who serve at the pleasure of NASCAR, are sort of forced to put a happy face on this and act like it's not very complicated. But I bet they're going to spend a lot of time in the next few weeks just explaining exactly what's going on to some of their listeners.
Mm. Well, I noticed there was quite a bit of TNA because of the Monster Energy girls.
Yeah.
Like that was, and then Hooters. Hooters was another. It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, is that because of the typical audience? That's, or is it, well, I don't know, male driven?
The Hooters girls have been around forever, but of course, with Monster Energy taking over for Sprint, that was some of the talk in Speed Weeks, is the way those girls look like they came straight from the bondage and discipline department at the local, you know, X-rated bookstore.
Yeah.
Not that I'm complaining, but there's a lot of people who, I mean, Miss Sprint always, you know, you didn't have to guess at what her curves were, but at least, you know, they were covered up a little bit better than the Monster Energy girls. I'm just, you know, they really lucked out of Daytona. It was pretty warm down here. I mean, you know, the Monday after the race, it turned kind of chilly. But in Atlanta, you know, it can get pretty chilly.
Yeah.
this time of year. So I'm wondering if there's going to be some shivering Monster Energy girls up there.
We got a fever now. Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, NASCAR, the whole season going on. Anything just getting started? Daytona is such a wild thing all by itself. What do you think about Atlanta this weekend? Any thoughts on that?
They've made some changes. They've lowered the downforce to make the car slide around a little more, which is one more little prescription for more excitement. Some drivers really like that. Tony Stewart was one of the guys that liked a loose race car. Jimmy Johnson, it did beat him a couple of times in the preliminaries here where he lost the car all by himself because it was too loose. Some of the drivers don't like the rear end that slides around a lot, and some of them love it. So I think we're going to maybe see some newer drivers who are more used to that pop up. The other thing is the kids. I mean, Chase Elliott had this race won at Daytona before he ran out of gas. There were quite a few of the younger drivers who qualified really well but didn't race all that well. So as they get some more time under their belt, I think we're going to see some younger drivers like Chase and some of the other guys really rise to the top.
Mm. Well, again, NASCAR, if you're a NASCAR fan, this weekend in Atlanta. We're going to take a little break. We're going to come back and find out about the drive that Stephen Cole Smith made in the new ZL1 Chevy Camaro. And then he got to find out about a special 1LE package that already even ramps it up more. If you like the ZL1 Chevy Camaro, stay with us. We'll be right back. New 200-mile-an-hour Camaro. It is The Drive. We'll be right back. The show brought to you in part by Dodge, Born Dodge. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for a tool that can quickly change from sanding to cutting to scraping? Well, the Craftsman C3 19.2-volt multi-tool offers multiple uses with just one tool. The quick blade release feature allows you to easily exchange accessories with a simple lever rotation. Variable speed settings and two built-in LED work lights will help you finish a variety of projects on your to-do list. Pick up your Craftsman C3 multi-tool today. Craftsman, made to make. Available at Craftsman.com, Sears.com, Sears Hometown, and Sears Hardware Stores.
Well, he does write for Racer.com and Auto Week and Automobile and others. His name is Stephen Cole Smith. I'm Alan Taylor. He also got to drive the new 200-mile-an-hour Camaro ZL1 from Charlotte all the way to Daytona, 500 miles. I think he says it's an amazing car. We're going to find out right now. Stephen Cole Smith, I got to show the convertible last year on TV, and a funny thing happened. I just thought it was so hot. They were going to commercial break, and Michael Strahan at the time on Live with Kelly and Michael, he's now with Good Morning America, but I'm right there next to him. He's in the car. I think it was Aaron, the sports gal, I can't think of her name, who was in the passenger seat or the driver's seat. And I was on the other side of the car so the cameras wouldn't see me if I ducked behind the car. I said, you know what? This car is so bitching, I just got to lay down. And I just, all of a sudden, I disappeared. And the producers of the show thought that I had like had a heart attack or something. And then and Michael Strahan, I heard him say, I don't know where he went. And then I poked my head up and I go, he goes, what happened? I go, it was so bitching, I just had to lay down. And actually, no, I said that afterwards. So they didn't know. I just disappeared. So I get a phone call from the CEO or the president of General Motors, Mark Royce. He goes, that was so great. Man, and it was like, you know.
That's on par with a moment where you said that the back seat is only good for amputees. Did you say that one year?
Yeah, the Pontiac.
Okay.
Regis said to me in the car, he looks, he goes, Alan, who could sit in the back? And the camera dives into the back, right? And the camera's looking, and the front seat is touching the back seat. It's like touching.
Right.
And I'm thinking to myself, let's see, Forrest Gump, was it Lieutenant Dan or Colonel Dan? Right? And so I thought, I don't know what it was, but he was an amputee. So I go, I don't know, Regis, an amputee. And it's like everybody went, ooh. Anyway, yeah, I got in trouble for that one.
Yeah, but that was not the Camaro ZL1.
No. That was a Pontiac, by the way.
Although the room in the back seat of the Camaro, we all know that that's basically a grocery tray.
So yeah.
Chevrolet has this cool program for Indy where they bring us into Detroit and we drive something cool back down to Indy for the Indy 500. They did the same thing for this one. It was pretty ambitious. It was like 500 to the 500 was 650, meaning 500 miles to the Daytona 500 was 650 horsepower. And the idea was that a lot of the magazines have had the car and they've tested it and it's a rocket ship. But how many, what's a car like to live with? So we lived with it for a day, we're 500 miles. We swapped out midway through with a coupe and a convertible and with a manual six-speed and the fantastic new 10-speed automatic, which I thought this thing is going to be busy. It's going to be shifting up and down all the time. I was wrong. That is one of the most seamless, you know, just a wonderful automatic transmission, and I would take it over the manual any day.
Really?
It being 0.2 seconds quicker in the quarter mile anyhow.
Whoa.
But the car, I thought the car, even on a stiff setting, was pretty manageable. I mean, it's, you know, it got decent mileage. You know, if you're up in 6th or 10th gear, it's the engine's not working very hard. I really like the car. I haven't been as big a fan of this particular Camaro as some people, but this Camaro I really, really liked. But then, we get down to Daytona, and they say, tomorrow we've got a something special to show you. And it wasn't open to everybody. It was just open to the Chevy people. And it turns out to be the 2018 version of the Z01 with the 1LE option package, which is a absolutely hardcore, I'm only going to drive it on to and from the track package that they said around the track in GM's Milford area up in Michigan. It's about a two-minute track to get around. And this new version of the Z01 1LE is 3 seconds a lap faster than the Z01 that we drove down to Daytona. So I thought, man, they're already showing us faster cars, and this car's barely been out yet.
Well, you know, that's a lot of horsepower, 650 horsepower. That's just
a lot.
It's awesome, though. I mean, I remember when I had a 2007, my Ford GT500, a Mustang, and I thought, I've got to buy one of these because they will never, ever make a car with higher horsepower than this. And it's like, you know, what a disappointment that was in my life. But on the other hand, it's like a good disappointment, you know what I mean? Because
right.
I thought horsepower, you know, they were going to just do away with it, like the electric car was going to take over, which is still kind of, you know, that's in the potential future of the fact that we will have just cars that drive themselves. And
yeah, but
you know,
unfortunately, old guys like you and me will be dead by then. We'll still get to drive our cars and shift and go fast and break the speed limit.
Yeah.
The thing that amazes me, Alan, the first thing they did at Charlotte was take us to Rick Hendrick, the team owner in the Car Dealers Museum, which is just amazing. And Rick is a Chevrolet guy and has, I think, 35 1967 Corvette 427s out of the museum of 200 cars, half are Corvettes, 35 of them are 427. And I remember that car, and it was a rocket ship, but it also was almost undrivable on a daily basis.
Oh, totally.
You could not use it as transportation. That's the difference, Alan. Now is they're bringing us 650, 700 horsepower cars that you can carpool in. You can drive in Manhattan.
I know.
And, you know, it's just amazing they've got that kind of power, but they're still able to service daily transportation.
It's awesome. It is an awesome time. And it could be the best of times right now because I always wonder when are they going to take that horsepower away. But Dodge, one of our sponsors, may have something special in store for the New York Auto Show, the new Dodge Demon. We'll see if that gets over the 707 they currently have. Stephen Cole Smith, Racer.com, Auto Week, Automobile, all the best out there and the best to you. Thank you very much, Stephen, for your report and the new ZL1. I can't wait to get behind the wheel myself. Thank you, buddy.
I will see you. I'll see you in New York.
All right, brother. Thanks. We'll be right back. It is The Drive.
The Dodge brothers weren't big on self-restraint, and thank goodness for that. Because when you're always pushing the limits, you engineer cars like the available 370-horsepower Dodge Charger with a Torque Flight 8-speed automatic transmission. It's why Dodge is the only brand that grows as fast as it drives. One drive and you'll discover why Dodge is America's fastest-growing performance brand. Data is calculated using the latest available year-over-year retail vehicle registrations. Dodge is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
Well, you're listening to The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor, a show brought to you in part by Subaru. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. They have the best commercials. It's crazy. That was kind of tear-jerking commercials. Joining us right now from Autotrader.com, Brian Moody, executive editor at Autotrader. They do more than just, you know, have you post your car and sell your car there. They actually do lots of reviews and stuff. And I know because I spent some time in Iceland with Brian driving around glaciers. So, yes, they do more than just...
So much more.
So we just got done talking about the Daytona 500 and the new Camaro ZL1 with Stephen Cole Smith from Racer.com. And it was pretty wild race. There's, you know, as you know, there's a whole new kind of, they have NASCAR divided into segments. You know, it's a whole new way of looking at it. But that's really kind of the way Auto Trader is. I mean, there's the, I want to buy or sell my car. And then there's this other segment, which I can find out about, like what you're going about to talk about, Auto Trader's best interiors under 50 grand and good as new list. Regarding certified pre-owned vehicles.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about those. Yeah.
We have a lot of, obviously, Auto Trader is a mix. People don't know that, maybe you don't know this, is a mix of cars listed for sale. Now, Auto Trader doesn't own these. It's a listing service. Dealerships use it. A mixture of new, used, and certified cars. The majority of the cars listed are new, and most of them are probably, you know, dealership, that kind of stuff. But there's also, like you said, there's used cars listed by people like me and you. There's also certified cars, and to help people find the best thing for that, what we found was that people were often considering new and CPO together.
CPO.
Yeah, certified, pre-owned, and new together, and they would consider both of those together the whole time they were shopping and doing their research until the very last second, like someone took a hard left and yanked the wheel. And it went one way or the other at the very last second. It wasn't like you could gradually see them going toward guessing that's because of price, guessing that's because of availability. But once they get down to the final day, it's like I just decided, boom, I got to have new, or boom, I got to have certified pre-owned.
Well, to that example, though, I went to buy a new car one time for my wife and ended up buying the next bigger, better thing certified pre-owned. Because
right.
I got the next bigger, better thing for the same price as a brand new. And listen, everybody knows the most money lost on a car is that very second you drive it across the curb and it goes into the street and now it's a used car. So I don't mind.
Perfect example. And I did the opposite when my wife and I went to buy a car. We went to go shop for a used car. This was many years ago. And we settled upon a Toyota Camry. And we're going to get a used Camry. And went to the dealership, and I'm like, well, how much is this? How much is that? You know, there's a three-year-old, and he's like, oh, that's $22,000. And I'm like, for a used car? Why is it so expensive? Well, this one over here is, $24,000. And I'm like, how much is a new one? And the guy's like, $25,000.
Right.
Well, why don't I just get a new car then? Why don't I want a three? You know, so we ended up buying a Toyota. We kept it for 13 years, but we did that where we were considering both new and used together, and at the last minute, I was like, well, I clearly would rather just have. So some cars retain their value better than others. My guess is if you're shopping for, you know, some of the domestic brands, that might not be the case, that you might have a dramatic difference in new versus used. But not all. Ford trucks is a great example. Used, good luck finding one that's a great deal. They're expensive because people know that they're good.
Right, right. Well, it's interesting. I've done the same thing where you go in and you look at the used ones and they're like, man, that thing's expensive. What's going on there? Well, part of that is the kind of the game that dealers play. Now, they put the price, with a used car, you can price it for whatever the hell you want. With a new one, you're stuck with a window sticker, manufacturer suggested retail price. You're kind of stuck with that. They can add additional dealer markup. You know, the floor mats are $1,300. $1,300 floor mat, you know, whatever. But with a used car, you can ask whatever you want. And the idea is ask a ton. If the person has a trade-in, and so they, Brian Moody, you have your 13-year-old Toyota Camry. What would you like to get for that, Brian? Well, if we can get $5,000 against that car, well, we can give you $5,000 against the $25,000 to $4,000 used Camry. So,
right.
See, there's a little bit of a kind of give and take, and it is, unfortunately, the game. Now, that is the old game. It's not as easily played these days because people are so dang smart because of, you know, Kelley Blue Book and Auto Trader
internet.
And guys, you know,
the internet ruined it.
Yeah, the internet really did wreck the game. That's why I got out of being a car dealer.
Well, I think a lot of car dealers are kind of evolving and getting to the point where they want you to know what's out there, because they know that if you know the price,
right,
and you know your credit score and you know what you're looking for, there's a better chance that they can make that deal right then, versus if you just show up and go, I don't know. That's not maybe going to happen, result in a deal as quickly as the guy that comes in and says, I've already done all my research. I know that the Honda Accord LX is $2,000 less than the blah, blah, blah. So sometimes research can help and the internet can help facilitate the deal. But then you have to deal with, like for example, I was just driving the Chevy Bolt. You're not going to get a used one of that.
Right.
That only comes new. So if you want that car and seems like the range is the real thing, like they're really, that's for real, that's the only game in town. So you're not going to be able to get a used Chevy Bolt because it's brand new.
Right. Well, so you guys have a list, good as new list,
yes,
certified
sir.
Pre-owned. What do you got on the list?
Yes, sir. So these are cars that basically they look similar to the brand new car. So your neighbors are not going to know that you bought a used car. And it's a certified pre-owned car, so you get usually a pretty spectacular warranty. Here's some cars on the list. Chevy Impala, Honda Odyssey, Hyundai Santa Fe, Kia Soul, Mazda 6, Mini Cooper, and Nissan Pathfinder. So those are a few of the cars on the list, because those programs, by and large, have decent terms. Like, they give you an extra warranty. Like Chevy, for example, gives you a certified car gets up to 5 years or 100,000 miles of powertrain coverage. That depends on, you know, what the mileage of the car is when you get it. But you also
right.
get 2 years or 24,000 miles of scheduled maintenance.
Okay, okay.
Eh,
you almost made a mistake that used to be the truth. 2 miles or 2 minutes, whatever happens first.
Well, so that's a great point, though. Here's the truth. When you shop for certified pre-owned cars, why is it that Kia, when you buy a certified car from Kia at a Kia dealer, they can give you the remainder of the 100,000-mile warranty? Well, the reason for that is because Kia is not in the business of losing money. They know that by them offering you that warranty, that they're not going to lose money by honoring it. So
right.
they know they've built a good car. Other programs are much shorter. The Dodge program is 3 months or 3,000 miles, and you can buy extra on top of that. And every car program is different, so they aren't all the same. It's worth doing some research and figuring out which is the best program, and then from that program, can I find a Chevy or a Ford or a Honda or a Subaru that I like?
Nice. All right, let's take a little break. When I come back, I want to talk to you about Auto Trader's best interiors under 50 grand. We're not about talking about the car. It's like you get in the car, you're blindfolded, you don't know what car you're in, and all the badges are covered up. Which one of these car companies has the best interiors that just make you love being inside them for under 50 grand? We're talking with Brian Moody, executive editor of Autotrader.com. We'll be right back. It is The Drive. Haynes, the worldwide leader in vehicle repair information for over 50 years, is now available in electronic format with Haynes Manuals Online. You get all the trusted content of the Haynes printed manuals, but with added features including over 750 color photographs, color wiring diagrams, and videos to help you do the job right. They're formatted for all electronic devices, and over 180 car, truck, and motorcycle titles are now available. The new Haynes Manuals Online are now available at Haynes.com. Well, you're listening to The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor. Our show brought to you in part by Bridgestone, and they're passionate about making tires you can count on to perform when it matters most. Bridgestone Tires. We're joined by Brian Moody. He is executive editor at Autotrader.com. He's my pal. He knows a lot about cars. It is now time to talk about Autotrader's best interiors under 50 grand. I always tell people, Brian, that when I get in the car, I'm living inside the car. I walk up to the car, that lasts
exactly.
for, you know, 20 seconds. I'm in that car, and you know me, the show's called The Drive. I'm in that car 12 hours. I better love what I'm looking at and sitting in.
I agree 100%. Yeah, that's where you spend your time. For the longest time, I could not understand why people were gravitating. Like, I'll admit this is my personal bias, not a professional one.
Okay.
Black interiors look cheap to me.
Really?
When the material, oh, I don't like it at all. And I'd see these expensive European cars with all black interiors, and I thought, this looks like no better than a $25,000 Toyota.
Ooh.
Why did you spend $50,000?
Wow.
That's me. Now, add some colors, add some textures. I think Lexus and Mercedes-Benz and a few Acura has done a great job of making these inviting interiors where it's warm and a nice place to spend time, not all stark black, the place where light goes to die. There's no detail. I don't like it. This is my personal preference. This is my personal preference.
Listen, I totally get that. Now, I ordered a one-of-one Viper. Now, we're not talking about a $50,000 car. We're talking about a $150,000 car. But
yes.
I ordered, and they had a number of different choices of color. And I started out going, well, I think I want a tan interior and a leather, you know, buckskin color. And, of course, I looked at that and I went, that's way too much baby poo color. then I looked at, you know, all the different ones, and I ended up with black. But I ended up with black. I put red stitching on everything.
There you go.
And then I went with black leather and some suede in different places. And
different textures.
So, I can't say I would 100% agree with the fact that, black, if it's done right. But again, we're going to talk about Auto Trader's best interiors under $50,000. When you're talking about $150,000 or $350,000 or $1 million car, I don't care what color it is, it's probably going to be just fantastic. But
that's probably true. Yeah. And here's this is why I'm probably perfectly suited for the job that I have. Show me a $250,000 car that has that's terrific and everything, and I'll say, yes, it should be.
Yeah,
what I really want to see. But what I really want to see is show me an amazing car for $31,500.
Right.
Now we're talking. That's more my thing.
All right. Now, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Since, first of all, I love you, man, because you're totally honest. And just to me, this is the way it should be, right?
Yeah.
Mustang. I got to tell you, I don't care what color the Mustang interior is. They even have mood lighting that changes color. So if it's all black, it's going to have blue or pink or purple or whatever color you choose with their mood lighting that they put all over the place. So they actually have made it today with a Ford Mustang to where you can have this kind of custom, whatever your mood is for the day. If it's red because you're in this aggressive mood, or maybe you want blue because you're mellowing out, or whatever maybe it is. You have the ability to customize it. But I think Ford, when I got behind the wheel of the newest Mustang, you know, when it's current iteration that's maybe 3 years old now, I was like, wow, they really nailed it. But I'm curious, is the Ford Mustang in your list?
The Ford Mustang is not on the list, but that doesn't mean that it has a bad interior.
No, I get it.
It just means that we voted, and we felt that there were cars that were under that price range that maybe topped that.
Okay,
example, I'll give you a couple.
Okay.
Audi A4.
Well, of course.
For the price.
Yeah.
Spectacular.
Yeah. I agree.
Cadillac XT5. Again, for the price, spectacular.
I haven't been in that one yet. I'm just curious.
It's pretty good. Pretty good for the price. And then here's two that are near the top of the price range. And you can go over 50 if you load these cars up. So, you know, in all fairness, these are cars that start at 50, but you could easily go over. Both the Volvo S90 and the Lincoln Continental, I think, have spectacular interiors for a car that starts well under 50, and you can option it higher, but those cars, to me, both have they're not similar. It has a very unique and individual feel in each car, and you feel like you're driving something special, unique to just you, and that's quite an accomplishment for a car that starts in the 40s.
I'll agree, and I would only add to that, for me, because I'm a sports car guy, and as you know, the Ford Mustang is the number one best-selling, and I'm not sponsored by Ford, you guys, just so you know, number one best-selling sports car. They consider a Mustang a sports car. So obviously, I none of those cars right there would be considered a sports car, and I think it's harder to do a really nice interior in a sports car because you have less room, but very interesting. The Lincoln, which one did you say?
The Continental.
Really? Okay, I haven't been in that one yet other than the
I mean,
one, you know, I've seen them. But
I'm just going to give you one little thing. On a certain version, you get like this kind of tufting on the seats that's beautiful. You know how a lot of cars have a seat bottom extender that kind of pushes the seat bottom right up behind your knees?
Right.
And that, for me, is real comfortable. On the Lincoln Continental, that's split. So you can do just the left side, just the right side. And I just feel like that car, it doesn't, when you sit inside, you don't think, yeah, this is just a Ford.
Where they find this list, by the way?
This is on autotrader.com. You can search 10 best car interiors for under $50,000 and find that particular piece.
Awesome. All right, stay with us. I got one more segment with you. I want to find out what you've been driving lately. Brian Moody, executive editor at autotrader.com. This is The Drive. We'll be right back.
Go get yourself some cheap sunglasses.
Where does the love for a car come from? If the car is a Subaru Legacy, the answer would be the symmetrical all-wheel drive. Power goes to all four wheels all the time for optimum grip. The Subaru Boxer engine's lower center of gravity makes the Subaru Legacy more responsive around corners and gets better fuel economy than front-wheel drive competitors. What you have then is a midsize sedan with grip, handling, and enviable fuel economy. It's no wonder it turns people into people who love cars. Love. It's what makes a Subaru a Subaru.
It is The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor. Our show brought to you in part by Haynes Automotive Repair Manuals. If you want to fix your own car, which a lot of these things you can, Haynes is the information resource for the DIY enthusiast and the worldwide leader in automotive and motorcycle repair information for over 50 years now. Check them out at haynes.com, Haynes. Our special guest right now, Brian Moody, executive editor of autotrader.com, a real car guy, a friend of mine, and a good, honest man. That's the most important part. We are not shields for anything. If they're a sponsor, we'll let you know they are. And if they are, it's because they've passed the muster, and they're the best of brands we trust. And our slogan is, brands you trust, people you love. And that's what I've got right now. Brian, so you have driven the Chevrolet Bolt, B-O-L-T, not V as in Victor, Volt. This is the new, you know, B as in boy, Bolt. Tell the world.
Might they have named that better to differentiate it from the Volt? Just saying. Just a kind note to people that I care about.
Yep.
So, yeah, listen, the Volt is the hybrid that, you know, has a gas engine. The Bolt is pure electric. Driving that around here in Atlanta, it looks like to me so far, just this has been a couple of days, the range is for real. I've been driving it to and from work. We had a video shoot with it. We did some other stuff with it. I drove 15 miles home, 15 miles to work, 15 miles home. Each trip, 15, 16 miles from home to work, is only using 5 miles of range. So the regenerative braking and the regenerative paddle is really working. I've got 162 miles so far on one charge, and it's not even, it's just past half full. So, I mean, this is huge for a car that made some pretty, I have to say, made some pretty audacious claims that, like, you know, they always say that kind of stuff. Oh, our car is best in segment. Yeah, well, congratulations. So is everybody else's,
right,
depending on how you cut the numbers. But it looks like, I think I'm going to exceed the 238-mile range. That's the way it looks to me, because not perfect by any means, but certainly delivers on exactly what they promised. And for the price, I'm impressed, I have to say. It's a fun car.
What was the price?
Starting at, if you take out the federal tax credit, that's the $7,500, that gets you just under $30,000. So it really is a $37,000 car minus the tax credit. If you get the nicer one, it's more in the $40,000 range. And the nicer one includes things like leather and, you know, heated back seats and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So for what it is, I mean, you can get a Leaf for cheaper, but listen, a lot of the other cars that are out there that are electrics, I don't know about you, but I've driven these plug-in electrics, and it says you have 40 miles of range. Well, you start driving it, and I get 10 miles away, and I'm down to 15.
Right.
Well, what happened?
Yeah.
This doesn't do that.
Here's the deal. So this, the Bolt, B-O-L-T, B as in boy, Bolt versus the V as in Victor, Volt. The Bolt is an all-electric vehicle, 238-mile range, and he's talking, he's actually getting more than they say. The reason for this is that the range part of it, my guess, is calculated as I get on the freeway and I go from one to the other without touching brakes, because it has regenerative braking, which will actually give you power back.
Right.
So there's all kinds of different ways to calculate, you know, city versus highway and all these different types of things. But still, this is quite amazing. The mistake, perhaps the only one, maybe just that they made it so close, there's a confusion of, well, is this the new Volt, V as in Volt, Victor Volt? No, the Volt is a extended range electric vehicle, which has an onboard generator, an actual internal combustion engine that charges the batteries. This, the Bolt, only has batteries, no way to recharge until you plug it in. Confusion, unfortunately, kind of like the
Oscars. Here's why. Because I'm sure you run into this before. What we know and what the public knows is dramatically different. I have friends who I feel like pay somewhat of attention to the car world, and they say, so if I get a Prius, I got to plug it in, right? And you're like, no, you just drive it like a normal car.
Right.
You don't have to. So that's where the public is in terms of knowing. And so the similarity, I mean, the same could be said of Lincoln MKS, MKX, MKC, MKZ.
Yep.
Those are very similar sounding. I don't know that I don't know. I might have raised my hand in that meeting and said, let's call it the, Sabidu or something or other, just to differentiate. But yeah, what do I know? Yeah, exactly.
Brian, you're the best, man. Well, you like the car otherwise?
Yes, it's actually very, very good. I have to say I'm very impressed.
Nice. Well, you can find out all these test drives and information and the Good as New list and the Auto Trader's best interiors under 50K. If you go to autotrader.com and noodle around a little bit, there's more than meets the eye. It's not just car dealers and private parties selling their cars.
Do it.
Do it. Do it now. Brian Moody, executive editor, Auto Trader. Thank you, brother.
Yeah, thanks, man.
All right. We've got another hour coming up. There's some news in between. Whether it's good news or bad news, that's not my fault. My job is to entertain and educate. This is The Drive. We'll report. You decide. No, that's Fox News. No. We're The Drive. We'll be back. Stay with us.
Cancer is the number one cause of death by disease for children in the U.S. today. Since the Austin Hatcher Foundation's birth in 2006, it has grown to provide unique programs to help the children and the families affected by pediatric cancer. Support begins at the time of diagnosis and continues throughout survivorship at no cost to families. Lives touched by the foundation continue to rise each day. But we need your help. Donate, volunteer, or partner with the Austin Hatcher Foundation. Learn how you can get involved. Visit hatcherfoundation.org for more information.
Exclusive interviews, real-world test drives. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat. This is The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Well, it is hour two of our show this week. Welcome aboard. Joining me back in the seat here in the studio is BJ Colleen, carbuzzard.com. And car person extraordinaire, very, very much more tech savvy than I am. She's the one who will say to me, no, it doesn't have that. It has this. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And the difference is that she actually takes notes at the meetings and I just sit there and look at the stars, you know. Anyway, yes. No, but, you know, listen, I take it in. It's like I take it in. I'm kind of like a gigantic nostril just smelling in all of the stuff that I
I don't even know how to answer that. The gigantic nostril.
I sniff in all the information I need, and then I breathe it out later on the radio. That's what I'm trying to say. Speaking of that, I have driven a vehicle that I am actually quite impressed with, other than a couple little things.
You were down in San Antonio, weren't you?
Yeah.
At the Jeep Compass?
Yeah, the 2017 Jeep Compass. Now, listen, here's the deal. When you look at it, you're going to go, oh, no, that's a Grand Cherokee. It's not. It looks just like a Grand Cherokee, but it's like pint-sized version. You know what I mean? It's like, how did they do that? Well, it's because they know how to do that kind of stuff. But they really did a good job, because I think the Grand Cherokee is very nice looking. And I think that the new Compass, and it's an all-new vehicle, looks like a mini Grand Cherokee. Hats off to them. I think they did a great job. The Compass, obviously, because it is so far, you know, along in the cycle of building vehicles, has got lots of technology. I don't know where to start with it. So, BJ, I'm going to let you go. What did you think about what? I have so much information.
If it's a Jeep, I have to ask about the off-roading portion, because a Jeep is supposed to be capable of doing anything off-road. So was this as capable as all the other Jeep products?
As it is a Jeep, it is trail rated, right? And it is. We went off-roading and literally took it places that even I thought, nah, this one ain't going to make that. Because this is a car-based SUV. But they made sure that they still put all of the Jeepness in it and its ability to go pretty much wherever it wants to go. It has the most advanced 4x4 system in its class with Jeep Active Drive System, actively manages torque, and can send 100% of the available torque to any wheel as needed. And it also has the Jeep Active Drive Low with a 20-to-1 crawl ratio. What does that mean? That means it can go so slow, and as soon as one of the wheels start to slip a little bit, it sends it somewhere else to where you are not – it's like there's no tire spinning anywhere. It just crawls up the side of the mountain. I don't know how it does it, but whatever it does, it's called Jeep Active Drive, and it is amazing. It also has Jeep Active Drive Low, featuring brand Select Terrain traction control system. Select Terrain allows the driver to dial in the desired on or off-road setting, and that means that if you're in sand, you dial in sand. If you're in rocks, you dial in rocks. And literally, it'll say rocks, it'll say sand, it'll say, you know, tarmac. So you are actually telling it whether you're in mud and snow or tarmac or whatever it might be. But I got to say, it is unbelievable. Every time you do that, you're changing everything about the drivetrain. The everything from the fact that it has drive-by-wire, so that when you change that mode to rocks from sand. Now, sand is mushy and gentle, and there's no big bumps. But when you go on rocks, you're like bumpity, bumpity, bumpity. So your foot starts bouncing off the gas pedal. Well, if you dial in rocks, then you've told the gas pedal to ignore some of that bumpity, bumpity, so you don't start herky-jerky in your head around, and next thing you know, you got whiplash. Every time you change something, when you dial in that selected mode, you are telling it to do something different all the way through, from the shift patterns to the throttle tip in and the throttle capabilities. Again, drive by wire. It is freaking amazing. And we went places with that Jeep that I never thought I would ever take something that was what we would call a car based anything. Let me take a break and take a little break. Right. We'll come back. This vehicle we're talking about, the 2017 Jeep Compass, going on sale right now. They're shipping them out. 76 years now of Jeep. And I'm telling you what, this is a nice machine. We'll come back and talk more about it on the other side. You're listening to The Drive.
All the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breeze.
On the track, even 100th of a second decides who wins and who loses. That's why Bridgestone uses advanced racing technology to create their fastest street-legal replacement tire yet, the new Bridgestone Potenza RE71R. Engineered with an innovative hydro-evacuation surface and unique tread compounds, the new Potenza RE71R is designed to give you maximum grip and ultimate cornering on or off the track. Bridgestone is changing the game in tire performance.
Are you ready? Let's do it one time!
Well, you're listening to The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor, a show brought to you in part by Brembo, the choice of champions, Brembo Brakes. BJ Colleen is on the phone. She's been asking me, well, one question anyway, about the new Jeep Compass. Sorry, I had to cut you off on that last question, but you asked me one question. And I pulled my notes, and I had some pretty good information there. But the Jeep Compass for 2017, I think we left off with the herky-jerky stuff. Did you catch that?
I just wanted to congratulate you on the herky-jerky and the bumpity-bumpity, where you're using the actual technical terms for everything. So that was great. No, my one question, and I know the answer because I've done it myself, but for example, you have the Jeep Compass. You know, they've got the Jeep Grand Cherokee, the Jeep Cherokee. I was in the Jeep Renegade before. And SUVs are incredibly capable off-road. But you got to know, how do they drive on-road? And I know the Renegade was absolutely impressive for its on-road capabilities. How did the Compass feel on the regular highway?
Well, it's interesting because I was with Carl Brower from KBB, Kelley Blue Book, and we were talking about everything under the sun, and all of a sudden we ended up at the first stop where they kind of have this route that we drive on, and And it was, we started out in San Antonio, Texas, near the Alamo, near the Riverwalk. And we then had to drive to what we'll call the mountains, which in Texas, where we were, there's not much really of mountains. It's more like hills, hill country. But anyway, we got there and I looked at him and I go, you know what? This thing's damn comfortable. And he's like, I know. And the one we had had this big giant moonroof, sunroof thing that goes from front to back. And the way they made that to where it wouldn't take up headroom is the sunroof pops up and goes on the outside of the vehicle instead of sliding inside of the headliner. Usually you can lose some headliner space. But they really have thought of everything, BJ. And to your point, it was really, really comfortable. And I said to Carl, I go, this is really nice. And and we agreed, both of us, that it was so much so that we literally, you know, forgot about testing it and thinking about it because we were just comfortable. And so we said to each other, all right, we got to really think about this. So to your question, I'll take it one deeper. It has, which I think is an underpowered powertrain, okay? It comes with the fuel-efficient, and that's what it says, fuel-efficient 2.4-liter Tiger Shark engine producing 180 horsepower, 175 pound-feet of torque. Now, I think it's underpowered, but at the same time, it's not a SRT Grand Cherokee with a big old honking V8 in it. It's not supposed to do that. They do have 17 combinations of fuel-efficient powertrain options that they sell around the world, which I'm pretty impressed with that by myself, because the fact is that they build these in four different places around the world because it's a world platform. But there's 17 different combinations and they're only offering us one Jeep. Please give us a diesel or something, you know, anyway, or a bigger engine. I don't know. You know, I will say, too, it does have a 2,000 pound towing capability, up to 2,000 pound. What is that? A little dinghy, a couple of jet skis, you know, a trash trailer. It's not much, but it's the most in class from what I think they said. 2,000 pounds, I don't want to tow much more with that because it's not that big of a vehicle. At some point, then the trailer starts pushing you all over the road. So, but to answer your question, it drove really nice other than I think it was a little underpowered, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. I think, you know, they have to make these small engines to make them compliant for the European market because you get taxed on anything over 1.5 liters. So I understand why they do it, but you're right. Give an option to the American market where there's a little bit more power for us.
Has the fully advanced technology features, fourth generation Uconnect system, which is great. It's got the Apple CarPlay. I love that. You know, there's four different systems for the screens in the dashboard. There's a 5-inch, a 7-inch, and an 8.4-inch touchscreen. I like the bigger one. Again, it does have CarPlay. I think it's very nice. I think it's a great vehicle. Believe it or not, starts in 2x4. Who wants to buy a 2x4? But you never know. Some people don't care. At $20,995.
That's a good price.
Yeah, the limited is like $28,995. But, you know, I'm going to go for a limited because I want all the stuff. And at that price range, I mean, I think this thing, it's like a billy goat. It'll climb a mountain. It'll climb a tree, whatever you want. It's a little bit, that would be an ape. That'd be different. But it'd be like you can climb almost anything. And I think it's really handsome. Really, really handsome. I love the looks of it. And it's got a lot of, you know, lane departure warning systems and features, blind spot monitoring system, rear cross path detection, 7 standard airbags. I mean, this is where $20,000 buys you a lot of machine or, you know, coming up on 30 if you buy one that's fully loaded. But man, Jeep. You're really doing a great job, people. I loved it. I think that you guys, for those who are looking for a little SUV that is able, we'll call it capable, trail rated, you can't go wrong with something like this. I'll take a break. Then I want to find out what you have been driving, BJ. The new Jeep Compass, everybody, coming out real soon to a Jeep dealer near you. 76 years. Congratulations on a huge success. We'll take a break. It is The Drive. We'll be right back.
Start thinking that I'm strange.
Not all projects offer enough space to swing a hammer. Now you can drive a nail in tight spaces with the Craftsman C3 19.2-volt Hammerhead Auto Hammer. With an adjustable head that pivots 0, 45, and 80 degrees, you can work on projects in tight corners or overhead with ease. Plus, two built-in LED lights and a convenient magnetic sleeve that helps position the nail will make your next project a breeze. Craftsman, made to make. Available at Craftsman.com, Sears.com, and Sears Hardware Stores.
Yeah. a faded sign at the side of the road that says 15 miles to the
Shack. You know where my love shack is? When I'm in Vegas, it is at BJ and Scott's house.
Yes.
You guys do have a love shack. I mean,
yes,
that is,
we do.
Wow, what a place. What a place.
It's a shack.
It's a shack.
Little shack.
Our show brought to you in part by Craftsman, America's most trusted tool brand, made to make. You can find Craftsman in Sears and a lot of other places. So, you know, Craftsman tools, made to make. BJ, so what have you been driving?
Well, I've been driving something that you can't go off-road with, but that's okay because you can get 58 miles to the gallon in it. And I'm talking about the Hyundai Ioniq. And that's pretty impressive because it is the best-in-class fuel economy for a hybrid vehicle. Hyundai is amazing. They actually started off knowing nothing about building hybrid vehicles. This was in 2005, and they taught themselves how to do everything, and here they come out with a vehicle that's best-in-class. And not just one vehicle. They are introducing the Ioniq Hybrid, the Ioniq Hybrid Plug-in, the Ioniq Hybrid electric vehicle. So they've got the trifecta going when it comes to fuel economy and delivering a great vehicle. This Ioniq, it's a hatchback, but it's a four-door hatchback. It really is. If you look at it, it looks almost like a coupe sedan, like it doesn't have a hatchback on it. But it's just an impressive overall vehicle from start to finish with the design, with the fuel economy, with the power plants. They really are coming along when it comes to electric vehicles. And they're going to be introducing the hybrid first, and then the plug-in hybrid will come at the end of this year, and then the all-electric's coming in April. But it really is impressive because the thing that Hyundai did is that they say, what stops people from buying electric vehicles? Do you know, Alan, what are the two roadblocks to buying an electric vehicle?
Money and a gigantic cheeseburger.
They got the cheeseburger handle. We had great cheeseburgers there. But you're right. They can be very expensive. And also, they're not crazy about the battery technology because they don't know what to do with it. They're not sure about it. What Hyundai did is they removed those roadblocks, okay? So first of all, they made it affordable. And on the Hyundai Hybrid model, it starts at an impressively low price. And I'm going to tell you that price because you're not going to believe it. But it actually starts at about $22,200.
For which one?
For the hybrid model.
Wow.
Okay? So you're getting a hybrid model that starts at $22,000. If you go to electric, it starts at $29,000. But by the time you take away the federal tax credit, if you get that on your tax, that's $22,000. And then California has a credit. So you're going to get an electric vehicle for $19,500, actually less than the hybrid price. So, you know, people say, I can't afford it. I can't afford it. Yeah, you have no excuse now. You can't afford it with the Ioniq. The other thing that Hyundai did is they took away the worry. Their electric batteries are warranted for the life of the vehicle. So now you have nothing to worry about. So, okay, well, I don't really want a car that looks kind of makes me stand out from the crowd. You don't have to worry about that either because the Ioniq looks like a great vehicle without worrying about, oh, it's a hybrid or it's an electric vehicle. It's just a great vehicle all the way around. And that's something that people tend to forget. It's like, okay, I don't want that Prius because everybody knows it's a Prius. And the interior looks kind of quirky. And you don't have to have that with the Ioniq. You have a real car that just happens to get you great fuel economy. They did a great job with this vehicle, yeah. Alan.
So as far as it's kind of an entry-level vehicle, does it still have all the airbags and all the different kinds of safety features and all, you know, like that last one we just talked about, and it had like 27 airbags in it, you know?
This vehicle has anything you can imagine. It's got blind spot detection. It's got, you know, it's got all the technology. It's got the Blue Link system which is like the Uconnect on the vehicle that you had.
Right.
It has every airbag you want. It can have every safety feature. It has wireless device charging, even lane departure warning, smart cruise control. I mean, it really is a real vehicle. That's what people think. Well, I don't want an electric vehicle because it's not a real vehicle. The Ioniq is a real vehicle. There's three different trim levels on the hybrid. With the electric one, there's a hybrid blue, and then there's a limited on that one and an ultimate package on that one, which is really everything. So Hyundai doesn't want people thinking, well, I have to sacrifice. I have to step down in order to get good fuel economy. You don't have to sacrifice anymore. You're getting a car that has best-in-class fuel economy. You're getting a vehicle that has impressive ride quality. I mean, it really was fun to drive. You got an interior with all the features you can imagine, and you're getting it at a great value with a battery that's warranted for the life of the vehicle. So Hyundai's just done everything right here. They just played it really, really smart. And I mean, it's a great car that you got to go out and test drive, because I think it's worth a big, big look if you're looking at an alternative fuel vehicle.
You know, it really is amazing. And it keeps on like a, you know, roulette ball that just doesn't drop. It keeps on rolling around in my head that, you know, Hyundai, Kia, these car companies is like, oh, they're the new car companies. They, you know, unproven, untested. It's like, man, when is that roulette ball going to drop into its slot in my brain and go, it's every bit as good as the Hondas, the Toyotas, and these other ones? And they've done things like give it the, you know, the 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty on the, yep, the powertrain. They've proven themselves over and over and over and over. And it's like, I don't know. And I'm a human being, so I'm not perfect. I'm just like a lot of people. When does that finally happen? When have they passed the muster, this poor car company in our brains, has so much, you know, road to hoe and so much hill to climb. And they've been the little train that could for so long. And Hyundai, I got to say, is doing a really great job with all their different vehicles. And nice job. I was like, wow, 19.5 for an electric vehicle. 22 for a hybrid. It's like nice. Well, I can't wait to get behind the wheel. BJ Colleen, thank you so much for being on with us once again.
My pleasure.
We'll take a break and come back with some more car loving people here on The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor. Now it's your turn to go test drive these cars. See you back in just a few minutes.
The Dodge brothers weren't big on self-restraint, and thank goodness for that. Because when you're always pushing the limits, you engineer cars like the available 370-horsepower Dodge Charger with a Torque Flight 8-speed automatic transmission. It's why Dodge is the only brand that grows as fast as it drives. One drive and you'll discover why Dodge is America's fastest-growing performance brand. Data is calculated using the latest available year-over-year retail vehicle registrations. Dodge is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
Our show is brought to you in part by Subaru. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Celebrating 50 years. Congratulations. I think they're like 8 or 9 years, year-over-year success and increased sales. Pretty amazing. Well, this is The Drive, and we talk about driving cars and owning cars and buying cars, selling cars, and the new stuff that's coming out. A lot of the same stuff that is done at Autoblog. Autoblog.com. The editor-in-chief is Michael Austin, a friend of mine. Michael Austin, what is going on in the world of Autoblog, brother?
You know, there's a lot going on, but, you know, in your world, I heard you guys talking about the Camaro. Have you heard about this 1LE?
Yeah, Stephen Cole Smith, earlier in the morning, he talked about, because he got to drive it from, I don't know, it was a 500-mile drive for the Daytona 500 last weekend, right? So wherever he drove from, he said, you know what, on the road, it really handled nicely, which he was really surprised, because most of these super high horsepower, you know, 650 horsepower. I have a Viper, as you know, and it's not comfortable. I will say that. And he was like amazed at just how, you know, road friendly it was. But he only touched on the 1LE package. Are you wanting to expand on that?
Yeah, well, and also just to expand on what Stephen was saying, well, Joel Stockdale, our editor that went on that same trip, it's the first 600 horsepower car he drove, and he said he was amazed at how, you know, easy it was, and, you know, wasn't super intimidating, that, you know, right, they really have this stuff figured out. So yeah, they added a 1LE package. So we've seen like spy photos of a Camaro with a big wing, and we're like, oh, this is the next Z28. And it turns out it's just this 1LE. And I don't want to say that in a bad way. It's more just they don't seem to be making a separate track model. They're adding this package on to the ZL1, like you can add a 1LE package to an SS. And it's awesome. It's got a huge carbon fiber wing. It's got a carbon fiber hood. It has the Trick Multimatic shocks. It has carbon ceramic brakes. So it's like the ACR version of a Camaro. Probably it has a lightweight seat, so they took some weight out. It might be still be a little more comfortable, sorry.
Right.
But maybe not as quick on the track.
Well,
it's,
you know,
definitely
what's
heavier.
What's funny is a lot of people, you know, a friend of mine took a picture of my Viper in front of his barber shop, and he put on there, he says, you know, somebody who likes to get their hair cut in my barber shop doesn't like to have his name mentioned, and he put all this in there, but he does drive an ARC. And I'm like, ARC, what is that? No, ACR. But see, us car guys, we know that that makes a huge difference. American Club Racer, ACR. And everybody thought it was Johnny Depp. So there's like hundreds of you know, all kinds of comments and, you know, pictures. And, oh, yeah, Johnny Depp gets his hair cut there, all this. And it was really funny. Johnny Depp never had his hair cut there in his life. But because
– you know, I every time I see you, I have to oh, stop yeah. and be like, is that Johnny or is that Alan?
Yeah, no, it's what do they call the guy he played in that movie, the pirate? That's me. I put my little pirate outfit on every time. Captain Jack or whatever, Jack Sparrow.
Yeah, lots of rings.
Right. Anyway, so ACR, American Club Racer, and you're saying that this new 1LE package in the Camaro ZL1 is a perhaps – taking a shot at what the ACR is for the Viper or the GT350R for the Mustang, a super track-worthy car.
Yeah, that's the idea. And so, you know, you're paying – I mean, like they take some weight out of the seat. With the Z28, they did that with – they took the frame underneath the padding, so it's just the padding basically. It's like the padding sitting on bodywork. You know, so they take these little things out that, you know, maybe you're not going to notice. But like I said, the main thing is – big aero, big brakes, and then those trick shocks. It's the same ones that were in the old Z28. It's the same ones that are in the Ford GT. They're basically like Le Mans racing shocks.
Right, right. Well, I know that the extreme aero package that I got on my Viper, the wing itself, the back wing was $6,000. So we're talking, you know, that can drive the price way up. And when the Camaro, I guess, is already about $60 for the ZL1. I wonder if that's going to be a $75,000 Camaro or more.
75 sounds reasonable. I mean, if you look at like the Corvette, where they, if you go from Z06 to Z07 package, that's about a $10,000 jump.
Right.
So yeah, I would expect something, you know, in that $75,000 to $80,000 range, know, which
it's still a good deal. I mean, if you think what it can do and what, you know, what we used to do in 20 years ago, you know, having to spend a whole lot more money and not getting near the capabilities. I mean, these cars today are bargains. They're true race cars that are capable of being on street.
Well, and you go back further where you look at the, you know, the muscle cars and you have, you know, different Hemis and, you know, different 427s. You're like, man, why don't they do that today? It's, well, they are making it today. You know, they're not, they don't have 8 versions of everything, but they're making these cars that, you know, we're going to look at in another 20 years and go, oh, man, I wish these were still around.
Yeah. Speaking of what they're making these days, something new coming. Everybody's been talking about it. I'm going to give you one whack at it, the Dodge Demon. Do you know anything on it?
I do know a few things on it because they keep trickling out a new little teaser video every week. I think the website's called If You Know, You Know. It's a super Dodge Hellcat. It's in the Fast and the Furious movie.
Oh.
It's got more power. It has huge, huge tires on it. It has some weight reduction, but other than that, we don't really know. You know, some people think that there's like Easter eggs and stuff hidden everywhere. So like there's a screen, if you freeze frame it in one of the videos, the tire says 815 instead of 315. So some people think it's going to make 815 horsepower.
Oh, love that.
But you know, they keep giving these hints that are just out there, but like nobody understands what the code means yet. So do you know any of that?
Now I've heard all these same kind of things. The other one you didn't mention was all-wheel drive. Imagine that.
Yeah, I found that one hard to believe. But, you know, it has the front tires are like the biggest front tire. You know, both of them, they have to put, you know, extra body work on the outside of the car just to cover the tires. So, I mean, they need the front tires for something.
Well, the new Challenger GT is all-wheel drive. Why couldn't they do it? I mean, technically, right?
Yeah, well, you know, a 300-horsepower all-wheel drive car is a little easier than 7 to 800.
Yeah, but, you know, the guys at the top, man, this is pony war times, right?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing I love so much about the Hellcat and the Challenger is, you know, they're just like, yeah, do it. Like, more sensible people wouldn't have pulled something like this off, and it, you know, just shows that there's still an appetite for horsepower and for cars and, like, old school muscle car performance.
No question about it. All right, we'll take a little break. We're going to come back. We're talking with Michael Austin from Autoblog, AUTOblog.com, Autoblog. Again, Michael Austin, editor-in-chief. This is The Drive. I cannot wait to see what the demon is. It's stirring the demons inside of me. This is The Drive. We'll be right back.
Let's say you want to make a DIY repair on your vehicle. Where do you go? Where do you turn for advice? Alan Taylor here. If you're considering free online repair advice, you might want to consider the source. Instead of putting your vehicle at risk, rely on accurate, complete guidance from start to finish with the experts at Haynes. Every Haynes manual is based on a complete teardown and rebuild of the vehicle. They learn the best ways to do the job and make it easier and cheaper for you. Available at most auto part retailers or at Haynes.com. You know, I love my Dodge Viper. Our show brought to you in part by Dodge, Born Dodge. Been lucky enough to have them as a sponsor for a couple years now. They're doing some amazing things. That company, Dodge, I mean, if you look at them, 707 horsepower in the Hellcat. We don't even know what the demon's going to have. The Dodge Viper ACR, one that I drive, that car went to 13 racetracks and broke 13 track records. Impressive. And they're not done yet. I'm sure there's going to be more coming out. FCA doing a great job, but we thank Dodge for sponsoring the show. Michael Austin is joining us. He's the editor-in-chief of Autoblog. We've been talking horsepower. I love talking horsepower, Michael.
All right. I'm getting ready. It's getting warmer here in Michigan just a little bit, you know, so we had 70 degrees last week, and you saw all the cars come out.
Wow.
Now they're back in because it's like 40 again. But we're just – everybody's waiting to get out of the garage.
Yeah, spring's around the corner.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes, I was talking about, the Viper. Same thing. You have to drive that on dry roads. You cannot take that car out on wet streets. The tires they come with, the Kumho tires, the only tire they make for that car, by the way, you can't go down and just say, oh, give me a set of these. And they're like, nope, that car only takes one tire that is made for it. They're so slick. It's like driving on I was going to say snot, but I wouldn't do that. It's on slippery stuff, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, you've put a lot of miles on yours. Is it still under the warranty or not?
I've got 5,000 miles on it now in 1 year.
Okay. So you're probably under the warranty. We just put up a story on the site, and we did a fair bit of research on this about whether or not your car is covered under warranty on the track. And, you know, the Viper is one. We didn't look into it because they stopped making it, but that's one where you'd assume, because this is clearly, you know, it says Club Racer in the title, that it would be. But the interesting thing is almost every manufacturer has some kind of stipulation that says you can't drive in a race event. And the terminology varies from car maker to car maker, but it's really funny because, you know, you buy a 911, you think, okay, I'm buying this performance car, I can go take it out to the track. And there's a lot of gray area there.
Mm. Well, it's interesting you're saying that because, you know, Porsche just opened a performance driving center in Los Angeles, right off the 405 freeway. And they're basically tempting everybody to bring their Porsches out because, I mean, it's Porsche's driving school and their race course, their facility, you might say. And there's a restaurant in there. So it's like, come on down for the weekend, take your car on the track. And you know, but maybe they wouldn't consider that, you know, a race. Maybe that's just, you know, like they said, club racing. Maybe that's not considered racing. I don't know.
Well, yeah. So the basic interpretation, although, you know, it also depends on the dealer and what their inspection is. And, you know, they're looking for abuse. So, you know, if you take a performance driving day, a lot of people say, or, you know, interpret that as this is not a race event because you're not being timed. You're not doing wheel to wheel race, which is kind of a funny thing because autocross, because it is timed, even though it's one of the easiest and safest ways to go racing, autocross would, you know, void your warranty to the spirit of the law. But what they're really looking for is an excuse. If you abuse your car, they want to have a reason to say, hey, look, this is abuse. And, you know, so I think they intentionally make it that gray area so that can, you know, they can use that where if you over rev your engine or something, you know, that gets recorded in the ECM. And the other interesting part of this that seems to be clear, consistent from the automakers is, If you drive it in stock condition on the track, you know, that might be okay. Again, it might not constitute abuse. But if you put new tires on it, like the ones you have on your, you know, the ones on your Viper have so much grip that it would change the characteristics of a different car, that's going to stress other components. And then that could be considered abuse and not covered. So you know, you can buy a performance car like a Porsche or even a Subaru BRZ. A lot of the GM stuff is covered on the higher levels, Camaros and Corvettes. But, you know, you got to run it in stock condition until your warranty's up.
Well, that's why you buy an ACR that has adjustable shocks. And you want to take it on the track, you adjust the shocks, you put them back when you're done. It's all put in by the factory.
You put that front splitter on.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know how many people actually, you know, do take their cars to the racetracks and do that. It's probably not many. And my guess is that most folks that would do that would do it beyond when the warranty was, you know, way past when the warranty's up, because then the car has had its years, it's had its use, and it's time to retire it to the racetrack.
Which, yeah. And, you know, if you want to go racing for real, that's kind of the lesson is, you know, buy a car that's a full on race car. But again, you know, you're buying cars like your Viper or a 911 or a Corvette or a GTR, and you're thinking, hey, I want to do a couple track days a year, or maybe, you know, you belong to one of those country clubs and you got to, you know, you want to keep up with your garage neighbor. And, you know, so like I said, it's pretty interesting because of the ways they treat it. And, you know, something could happen to your car that might not be your fault, but if you run into the wrong, you know, dealership or tech, you might be on the hook to pay for it. And one of the most aggressive ones is Nissan, which just says racing or competitive driving of any sort whatsoever and or use on a track or driving on any airstrip. This is for the GTR.
Wow.
You know, like they sell a Nürburgring. They had a Nürburgring edition.
Right. Well, you know what? I'll tell you what, that right there is something to consider. Where can they find this on Autoblog? Is it just go looking for what's it titled?
It's is your new car warranty good at the racetrack?
There you go.
It's on the site right now.
All kinds of great stuff. Autoblog, my friend Michael Austin, editor-in-chief, autoblog.com. Thank you, Michael. I'm glad I bought an ACR. I feel pretty safe that, they're not going to warranty it if I'm behind the wheel. Never mind.
Thanks for having me again.
All right, man. Take care. We'll take a little break and come back with some more of The Drive. Stay with us. Black bandana, sweet Louisiana, robbing on a bank in the state of Indiana. She's a runner, rebel, and a stunner from the everywhere. If the measure of a car was how many people it turned into people who love cars, the Subaru Outback would be worth its weight in gold, thanks largely to its symmetrical all-wheel drive. Unlike other systems that wait for a wheel to slip, it powers all four wheels all the time, all while with better fuel economy than midsize SUVs. And the fact that the Outback is made in a zero landfill plant doesn't hurt either. It's a car that is truly built to be loved. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Listening to The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor. Joining me right now is my longtime mentor, car mentor, and friend, Dick Messer. And he is Director Emeritus at the Peterson Automotive Museum. Also, somehow involved with the Amelia Island Concours that is happening next weekend, March 10, 11, and 12. So, for those around the Florida area, Amelia Island, Florida, or for those who want to go, you still have time. You have a week until the whole thing starts getting underway. How you doing, Dick?
I'm doing fine, Alan. How are you doing?
Oh, my God. Travel. I'm not going to be able to make it this year to the Amelia Island Concours. I got so much going on.
I know what you mean. Amelia Island. People ask where Amelia Island is. And you say it's just north of Jacksonville, Florida. You fly into Jacksonville, Florida Airport, International Airport. You drive north about 80 miles, and you're in Amelia Island, but nobody knows where it is. So when you say the Amelia Island Concours, it's not Pebble Beach. Everybody knows Pebble Beach,
right?
Where it is up there in the Monterey Peninsula. But Amelia Island is on. It's actually on an island, Amelia Island. Fernandino Beach is the main city on the island, and they have a Ritz-Carlton Hotel there. It's a 5-star Ritz-Carlton Hotel. And back 22 years ago, when this thing started, it was a little car show on the lawn of the Ritz-Carlton on the golf course there. There's an 18-hole golf course adjacent to the hotel. And Bill Warner thought he'd have this little car show and raise a little bit of money for charity. And it's just blossomed into something huge. I got on the board when I moved to Florida. You know, I knew Bill, and he said, well, you're coming to Jacksonville. Will you be on the board of the Amelia Island? I said, sure, I'll do that. And it's just, it's mind-blowing what an operation it really is. We got 8 permanent employees. We do a great deal of charity work for a lot of different charities, including a hospice of Southern Florida, which is a big one, and the cops there in Northern Florida, and like that. It's a charity. It's a raising money situation, but it's also considered the Pebble Beach of the East Coast, although we call Pebble Beach the Amelia Island of the West Coast. You know, it's a fantastic show. And it's different. It's different than most concours. It's called a concours d'elegance, but it's more than that. I mean, we bring out stuff that people don't see very often. A lot of times these concours are cars that are beautifully restored, put on the lawn, and you've got your Ferraris and your Maseratis and your Rolls Royces and your different high-end cars. This has that also, but it also we have a four-cylinder Porsches are favored this year. And these are championship-winning cars from back in the 50s. There's going to be a whole slug of those.
Yeah, and motorcycles and
bring them over. Yeah, well, amazing. We do motorcycles. You know, most of the concours now are doing motorcycles.
Right.
We started that trend about 15 years ago, and we got we're going to have scooters this year.
Nice.
It'll be a class of scooters. We got about 16 scooters. They're a little smaller than regular motorcycles, so we got that. We've got streamliners. Now, you know, in a concourse, you say, "Oh, streamliners! My God, what is that?" Well, these are vehicles that were built for speed in different venues, like Hot Rod, like Bonneville, and European high speed runs and
right.
whatnot. And we've got a whole bunch of those lined up. It's a class of streamliners, and there'll be a best of class there, but it's not necessarily concourse quality stuff. It can be, but it's you know, we've got all that, and then we've got the regular stuff, and we've also have the Daytona 24-hour winning Cadillac. Cadillacs come back and to the show, and
right.
they won Daytona with what they call their DP1 car 24 hours about three weeks ago, and that car will be there at Amelia Island, and then leaving the next week to go down to Sebring, and there'll be the Sebring 12-hour race that next weekend.
Nice.
We also have a race. There's approximately 140 cars entered at the Fernandino Airport, which is just north of the Amelia Island Concourse, the following weekend.
Nice.
So if you wanted to come to the area, if you wanted to come to the Jacksonville area, and Jacksonville is a very, very nice town. It's most people don't know where it is, but it's up in the northeastern part of Florida. We live in Jacksonville, and we're about an hour and a half from the Georgia line. So it's up there pretty far north.
Well, hang on.
Come and stay.
Hang on. I was going to say, you live there, so you should know. We're going to be running into some news here in a little bit. The Amelia Island Concours is March 10, 11, and 12 next weekend. Get your tickets now. It is a fun event, like Dick says. Dick, we're going to have to get you on the show more often. It's been too long, my friends. Great talking to you.
Love to do it.
All right. Dick Messer, Director Emeritus of the Peterson Automotive Museum, car guy extraordinaire and friend of all in the car business. Dick, thank you, man.
Because I'm older than you are.
We'll see you guys all next week right here on The Drive. Hey, it's Alan Taylor. Are you looking for an opportunity to buy a franchise, one that you can really wrap your arms around? Crunch Fitness is really a great opportunity for you. Now, here's a fitness company that's about 10 bucks a month to join. So even if you just want to join, it's a great deal. You want to check it out because I have been personally watching the company grow like crazy. Visit them online at crunchfranchise.com and be in business for yourself, but not by yourself, and have fun doing it.